Welcome to Reorganization and Restructuring in Government, presented by Deloitte. Here's your host for today's discussion, Federal News Radio's Francis Rose.
Welcome to the program. Federal agencies are under tremendous pressure to save money, to do whatever they can to conserve resources. One of the ways they're doing that is by reorganization, by restructuring the way that they do business. Our panelists today are experts in that area to talk about how their agencies are doing it and the experiences that they've had in saving money and restructuring. Starting at my far left, Max Dyer is president of the Partnership for Public Service. Rhea Sue is the Interior Department's Assistant Secretary for Policy, Budget, and Management. John Powers of Deloitte Consulting is a principal at that company. And Jim Bradley is the Assistant Public Printer at the Government Printing Office. Max, we'll start with you. Agencies have had these challenges for a long time. This is not something new that's brought on just by budget pressure. There have been numerous calls over the years to restructure and remodel agencies, so to speak. In your experience, the agencies who have done it well, how have they done it?
That's a challenging question. First on the premise, I think this is a different time than we've seen, certainly in recent memory. This is the first time, at least since the 90s, that the government overall is seeing overall budget reductions of very large consequence. And I think what is also distinctive is that I think any reasonable interpretation would see this as something that is not a short-term proposition. This is not a cyclical issue. This is a structural issue. And therefore, this is something that has to be viewed as a long-term problem. So the starting point is I do think we are actually looking at a very different world than we've seen previously. And I don't think we actually have very good examples of government doing more with less in a dramatic way in the past. There are examples of individual organizations, agencies that have improved their service, that have done better, but nothing even close to as dramatic the type of change that we actually are going to need to meet the not only the budgetary demands, but frankly, the mission demands that are changing so dramatically given the very new world we're living in.
You win the prize for getting to the phrase more with less in a reorganization structure in the earliest, so congratulations on that.
Do my best.
Rhea Sue at the Interior Department, you've gone through a restructuring of the Minerals Management Service. Talk about what brought that on, and that wasn't a budget issue necessarily.
Oh, indeed. In fact, it was not a budget issue, as you probably recall. One of the nation's worst environmental disasters was created by the blowout of an offshore deep water well, which then created an enormous amount of controversy for the regulatory body that oversaw that that particular lease, the Minerals Management Service. So the Department of Interior, in the aftermath of that spill, set forth to reorganize the agency, particularly around, the major concerns that were raised within the context of the controversy, the concerns around the potential conflicts of interest, the potential cultural issues that impeded the agency's ability to be a fierce regulator, as well as the overall opportunities for the agency to focus on a clear set of missions. And so what was one agency, the Minerals Management Service, became three, and we essentially split out all of the independent functions of the original agency into much clearer functions. So the leasing function, the regulatory function in terms of safety and oversight, and the revenue collection function. So those are now three separate agencies. I think it's important to point out that that particular reorganization was a reorganization in many cases that was both inevitable and an opportunity, I think, for us to really focus on ways to improve, I think, the regulatory management of the Department of Interior, but weren't, again, necessarily driven by a budget or fiscal climate. But I think, in terms of lessons learned for reorganizations across the federal government, I think what's really important, even with the outstanding kind of very dramatic nature of kind of the catalytic forces for this event, is that we based the principles of the reorganization on the missions of the organization. And I think that was very, very important for the organizational employees. for really understanding what it was they were supposed to be directed towards and committed to. The long and the short of it, I think, is that reorganizations need to happen with people. They can't happen to people. And I think our greatest success in looking back at the reorganizations that we've taken charge of at the Interior Department is that we really put the employees really at the lead in trying to help us figure out how best to reorganize and how best to refocus some of those agencies. And I think as a consequence, we have seen great success out of those reorganizations. And so again, regardless of whatever the context is, I think there's some important lessons learned.
Jim Bradley, the Government Printing Office, your agency is one of the most historically rich in the federal government, and yet you're participating in the same kinds of transition that people in my business, the media business, are participating in with technology and so on. Talk about how that transformation has impacted how you're dealing with reorganization, restructuring, and refocusing at GPO.
Sure, I'd be glad to. First, let me say that GPO was 151 years old. We were formed in 1860, opened in 1861, the same day that President Lincoln was sworn in. Now, that's a long time ago. Change has been part of GPO the entire period of time, mainly driven by printing technology, communications technology. We were hand-setting type. Turn of the century, we had the Linotype machine, which was a tremendous move forward in technology and allowed us to do a lot more with less. Back in that time. Now we're working on apps. We do lots of stuff online. It's mainly the technology that has changed and allowed us to do so much more with less and still keep our core mission, which has always been keep America informed about the federal government. That hasn't changed. Our delivery platforms and our method of getting there has changed over the years. We certainly engage our employees in accomplishing that. For our recent buyout, we had a lot of information up front. We work with our unions. We kept them informed with weekly email and newsletters. We have a monitor system throughout the building that will post information to employees. So we try to make sure that everybody is on board, understands the options, and understands what we're trying to accomplish. And in our case, we lost about 15% of our workforce. And we flattened some of our management levels in one area, say, from 5 layers down to 3, which provides some savings and puts the employee closer to top management and getting the job done. So it's been very successful, not without growing pains, but by engaging our employees and continuing the change that GPO has been used to since its inception, we sort of continue that practice, and I think that we're going to come out the other side very well.
John Powers of Deloitte, what do you hear in what Rhea and Jim have talked about, what Max commented on earlier, that's similar to what you see at other agencies, and what do you hear that's different?
Well, what you hear first is the focus on mission. So it's interesting when we've done studies on federal government restructuring, and what you find is a lot of employees in the federal government have been through a restructuring. I mean, multiple restructurings is what we find in our research. The numbers are staggering, like something where 70-80% of the people have been through restructuring. But when you look into what the purpose of the restructuring was, most of those people have been through a organizational box and wire diagram restructuring, you know, essentially cost-focused or simply change in structure. And what I heard from both Rhea and Jim was a focus on mission first. So if the problem isn't the structure, I mean, the problem wasn't born of structure, it's born of the mission, then structure isn't necessarily the solution, or you wouldn't expect it to be. And they're both focused on trying to improve the mission of the agency. And in fact, it was a breakout in Interior, which made perfect sense for the mission. Jim's changing technology, perfect sense for the mission. I think the successful agencies focus on mission first, and then they bring behind it any changes that come with it. And there might be cost reduction, et cetera. And what we've seen is a wide array, though, of focus today. So you could basically put all the restructuring ideas into a 2x2, and some are about cost, some are about mission, some are about both, and some are about only one or the other. The really transformational changes end up being about mission and cost. They deliver better service, not necessarily for significant cost reduction, but better service at essentially usually same budget. Mm-hmm. being much more efficient at how they use. The delayering is a great example of, sounds like you could interpret that as cost savings. Actually, it's about information flow. So I suspect decision making's faster. I suspect the employees are closer. So people are more tied together. That's a benefit to how the organization operates. It's not a cost play. It's a performance play. And that's what the best of these restructurings will end up being and are.
Jim, more on that to what John was getting to?
Yes, cost, you know, there is some cost savings that, of course. But I think it makes us more agile, more efficient. It makes communication clearer and allows us to keep up with our mission and actually enhance the mission that we're providing.
Rhea, you were nodding your head in agreement there, too, as John was talking about the mission focus there.
Absolutely. I mean, I think as all of us in the federal government are kind of scratching our heads with respect to the incoming that we're seeing from Congress with, you know, the ongoing budget debates, you know, I think part of the answer there is not necessarily just how do we change structure to get the costs down, but how do we take advantage in some ways of the opportunity and really thinking about how to hone mission through potential reorganization and restructuring. And I think John's absolutely right in terms of where the true transformational change lies. It's when you have the combination of the two things. I just wanted to comment a little bit on what Max said earlier and what you repeated, which is this whole sense of kind of how do we do more with less in the federal government. You know, I think that's it's a critical question, again, that we're all really faced with. But I think at some point you really do have to start having the conversation of how you do more with less. And frankly, I think within the context of many of these agencies, you know, it's not just a matter of contracting; it's a matter of saying what are we doing that we can no longer do for the American public because of the budget climate, and let's really begin to have that serious conversation.
Max, I have said that a number of times on my program, exactly what Rhea is talking about, and that is the idea that more with less at some point kind of becomes, I think, a bit of a misnomer. Is that fair to say, do you believe?
Oh, totally. I think that it's a real problem, and I think it's even larger than has been put on the table so far, which is the dialogue largely now is in Congress and in the political realm has been about how do we save money. And the mission side, which I think has appropriately been the focus of the conversation of people here who are actually responsible for and familiar with how you actually achieve mission outcomes, that mission piece gets lost. And it's real easy to take money out of any organization. You just take the money out, but you don't understand what the implications are for mission. And so I think it is an unfortunate mantra that's always more with less, more with less. I think there's an aspect of that is actually really important in government. There really are efficiencies that are possible and where we can be using resources more effectively. But I think that it has to be a balance. You have to understand both sides of the ledger. You have to understand not just that cost piece, but what is it you're actually trying to get done for government. And that requires a certain amount of prioritization at some point in which you decide, hey, this is what was really critical for us to do, and therefore we're going to put resources into this. Again, the tendency in government is to look for the easy solution, the across-the-board haircut, and that doesn't actually get you what you need or want. In all kinds of different ways. So, again, I think there's a very, very significant disconnect between the political conversation and the implications that it has for our government to achieve what we want it to do.
John, it strikes me as we talk, I hear you talk about the mission focus, I hear Jim and Rhea also talk about the mission focus and Max's comments just now. It strikes me that the more with less dialogue might be a disservice to the people who ultimately the government serving, the taxpayer, explaining to them that maybe it's possible to do more with less when that's probably not a realistic expectation for them ultimately. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, I think it is. So the more with less has an insidious undertone that you have to look out for, which is more of the same for less. And I think that's the real problem is when you ask an agency, do the same thing you're doing, or I'm going to add two things to that list, and I'm going to give you less money to do it. What they almost have to do is dilute the mission as opposed to focus the mission. I think what we heard here is two people that are focusing the mission to deliver better value. So you might do different for less. I think we've got to give the agencies the ability to rethink the mission first, and then behind it, think about how to restructure. And I think that's always been the best examples I've seen. There's plenty of cases where the mission as it's set up today is designed for a different time, not just budget time, but a different time in what the government needed or what our citizens need or what the world needs. BBG is a really good example of a mission that is misaligned to some extent with the resources and the way they're deployed. So if you could realign the resources, you could actually do with the same, but do it in an entirely different, I'd say achieve the same mission, but in a different way. We've got to think of it that way. So it's doing it differently to be more effective, to get better value. That's where you really should start the conversation. Performance or value or cost, things like that should come out once you're done with the analysis. And I think that'll fit the budget realities, but you really should start with this value for the mission.
Closing thoughts for this part of our conversation. Rhea, the people element is what I want to get into next. If you could just give me a taste of what you experienced. You mentioned that these kinds of things have to happen with people and not to people. Just give me a thought to lead us into the next part of this conversation.
Absolutely. I mean, I think, look, we were dealing with an incredible set of circumstances when we reorganized MMS, and I guess I can fairly say that I personally have never encountered probably a more cynical, battered down, traumatized group of federal employees than in the aftermath of that reorganization. And you know, there was a real set of choices of, you know, are we going to basically do this reorganization to these people, or are we going to do this organization with these people? And we had to really have the confidence and the faith that the people that were part of this organization really wanted to see their organization succeed at the end of the day. And it's through that pivot that I think we were successful in actually reestablishing these three new organizations, so much so that one of them, I'd like to point out, the organization responsible for upwards of $12 billion of revenue generation for the Federal Treasury every year, the Office of Natural Resource Revenue, just won, you know, the best workplace of the year in Denver, Colorado, from the leading paper in the state, which I think is just an incredible transformation. So again, I think it's really important to remember that there are, you know, flesh and blood people that show up day after day dedicated to the missions of these organizations. And if you don't take them with you, if you don't have them lead you, then you're missing out, I think, on one of the more profound opportunities for success as well as profound opportunities for transformation.
I want to dig into that more when we come back. Jim Bradley at the Government Printing Office, you talked about restructuring in the form of downsizing, communication with employees, and so on. Give me a quick thought to take us into the next segment about people.
I think we were able, through the buyout, to honor the people that spent sometimes in the order of 50 years of working for us in particular technologies. And as we've moved on to more modern technologies, they were ready to leave, and we were ready to adopt new skills and provide service at enhanced service, if possible, and mixed platforms, which furthers the mission without any severe impact on the employees.
Our conversation on reorganization and restructuring in government continues in a moment.
These days, federal agencies are exploring how to be more efficient, from cutting hidden costs to operating differently. Turn to Deloitte. We blend public sector experience and private sector insights to help defense and civilian agencies rethink, reduce, and restructure, all while strengthening your mission, so you can stretch budgets more and your staff less. See how at Deloitte.com/federal. We help government help America.
Welcome back to the conversation on restructuring and reorganizing in the federal government. My guests on the panel today, Max Steyer of the Partnership for Public Service, Rhea Su of the Interior Department, John Powers of Deloitte, and Jim Bradley of the Government Printing Office. We talked in the last segment about people and how people are impacted when agencies restructure, when agencies reorganize themselves. Rhea, you talked about a success story at MMS. The restructuring that you did there was after a significant scandal, I think it's fair to say, was brought about not by budget pressures, as we talked about earlier, but you've seen a terrific transformation there as far as the culture, the environment in which people work. Talk about how that happened and the steps. I imagine it took very deliberate steps, a strategy to try to make a transformation like that happen.
Right. You know, looking back and actually thinking about reorganizations and thinking about cost-saving opportunities moving forward, I honestly think the easiest thing to do is to come up with a plan, right? The plan's not the hard part. The plan of how to get the cost savings or the plan of how to restructure, that's the easy part. The hard part is the actual implementation of that plan. And from our experience at the Interior Department, implementation is all about is all about how you have people lead you. The leaders of the Department of Interior are the people that have spent their careers dedicated to the missions that we deliver for the American public. And it's that pivot point of how to actually empower the employees of the organization themselves to see the opportunity in the restructure for greater value to the American taxpayer, for greater delivery of the services towards the mission, the mission delivery. Those are the things that I think excite people about the opportunities here. Not you got to do this because Congress said you had to do it, or you got to do this because the political forces say. So it's about trying to create an empowered situation where the real leaders of the reorganization are the people that are being reorganized. If that makes sense.
Yeah, you used that term opportunity a number of times, and I want to come back to you on that. But I imagine that was in your mind also, Jim, as you're trying to demonstrate to people at GPO, this is why this is an opportunity for our organization to move forward.
Yes, we tried to make that point with the employees, and I think it had a fairly good response. Through its history, GPO has done very few RIFs, and they've been very small in scale. We've made major transitions, normally around technology, and we're able to pick up our craftspeople who are very skilled in their trade and what they do, and convert them to a new technology that accomplishes the same thing. And for the most part, they look forward to the challenge and using the new technology and the skills to sort of enhance what they've done in the past in a modern, more efficient way that makes their life easier at the workplace and provides us with an opportunity to continue providing the service that we need to provide. And we're proud of that.
Max, Rhea talked about what I call the hammer down reorganization, where somebody comes in, puts the hammer down and says, this is how it's going to be. Both of our agency guests have talked about the importance of avoiding that. Do you still see that, though, a lot when agencies decide they're going to go through this process?
For sure. I think the norm is, in the sense is that it's easier just to order rather than to persuade. And I think there's a more fundamental issue underlying it, which is the very notion that in most circumstances, and this is something that John referenced earlier, that reorganization is actually going to drive you to better performance is, I think, a faulty one. And the 9/11 Commission said it best, and they said the quality of the people is more important than the quality of the wiring diagram. And there's a tendency, I think, particularly in Washington and in the political world, to look at wiring diagram solutions for problems that are, in fact, caused by culture and people. And in general, I think that there's way, way too much focus on looking for a restructuring. I think MMS is a different circumstance, and I think, again, by and large, those reorganizations typically either only happen and certainly only work where there's a burning platform, and again, a very explicitly burning platform here in this context. But the truth of the matter is that what we really ought to see is not just an emphasis on the people when we're reorganizing, but on the emphasis on the people even before you think about reorganizing. And if we moved people, if we actually had, as an example, a mobility requirement to get into the SES, you actually had your leadership people being more experienced and having worked in multiple organizations in government, outside of government, you know, amongst the different levels of government, I think we would see the kinds of performance improvements that people strive to achieve through reorganizations that they'll never get. So I think the people first mantra, the notion that you can't have good government without good people, is vital to the future of our government and, frankly, to our country.
John, what do you see agencies do well when it comes to managing people through a reorganization like this and really engaging them and bringing them on board? Where do you see them fall short sometimes?
So just to back up the statements of my colleagues here, we've done research, and the folks that have been through reorgs, and we see a lot of folks that have gone through this, the number one item that they think is the least or done the least well during a reorg is change management communication. So universally, people feel like that is an underemphasized area and could have been done better. I think there's a reason why, though I don't have the data to prove it, is that most of the reorgs I've been through have been box and wire diagram restructurings as opposed to mission-oriented restructuring. So the first thing I think you get out of these two conversations is a vision of the future for the employee. Private, in the commercial environment, we do restructurings. The first thing you want to set in people's minds is, here's where we want to be. So when we're done with this transformation or restructuring, here's where we're going to be as an organization. So you give them a view to the future. Essentially, that enables them to buy into the strategy or the vision. And that is the way to bring people along. So it's hard to bring people along with a hammer. And so if you're going to do a top-down force of a restructure, it's not going to feel good and people will go grudgingly, but you're not going to get the best performance out of them. You're not going to get them to do more than is asked. They're going to be in the foxhole with their head down trying to survive, which is essentially that mentality you get when you feel this thing coming. On the other hand, if you flip it around and you focus on the mission, which might have changes to the personnel, might have changes to the structure, might even have changes to the budget, you'll find people buying into that. And that's really the practice. That's the aha here, which is focus on that first. That will bring the people with you. Now, you have to be realistic. You have to be honest. You have to be direct about what's going to happen and what the changes are. So some people might choose this isn't the right time for them to transition along. And you may have to eliminate certain things or change ownership of certain things. But that's the real key is if you want to bring the people, you have to set the vision, which is the mission, about why we are here, what's the value of what we're doing for this country. People buy that. Then they will do extraordinary things for you, and then you'll get to your basically your destination faster and with less disruption.
Jim, is it fair to say that at your agency, with the technology transformation that printing and publishing is undergoing, that you've experienced a fair amount of transitions like John is talking about, where literally something that someone has done for their entire career may not be something that GPO is continuing to pursue?
Yes, that came out in the last buyout, and it's been something that's been part of our history. We still probably have a few people at GPO that used to run a linotype machine, but obviously we don't need those skills right now. And they've transitioned to do something different, more productive, and that's worked out well. GPO, in fact, sometimes our middle name printing gets in our way. We do a lot of printing still because that's what's asked of us to do. We don't produce anything on our own. We respond to orders. So we print both in our plant and an extensive system of procurement throughout the nation. We have 15 offices in the field, and we actually buy about 75% of the printing materials rather than produce them in-house. And it's a tremendous help for the private sector to have those jobs in their community. It's predominantly small businesses that get this work. But repurposing skills, training, keeping people informed, letting them know where they're going is a big help in this. And it's not all smooth, but it's very doable, and I think we've been very successful with it, and we'll continue along those lines. And people that may have been skilled in composition and typesetting, which is very traditional printing, now are engaged in helping us do web pages, and the latest is apps and e-books, and we're finding a lot of talent that we have. Traditional talent is able to convert and do that kind of work and quite successfully.
Talk about laying out that kind of path for someone, even down at the individual employee level, for somebody who maybe has been doing a traditional printing skill for a long time and maybe trying to decide how he or she wants to move forward with a career.
We work off a strategic plan. We lay that out for everybody to know. We encourage them to do individual development plans. Working with their supervisors to see where they want to go. We have a series of town hall meetings. We're about ready to have another round of town hall meetings to keep a dialogue going with the employees. We provide extensive training opportunities so that if they want to explore a new skill, we can get them some training in that to see if they want to continue with that. It is sort of a communication, a dialogue with the employees to offer them choices going forward.
Rhea, you have talked pretty extensively already about communication. Jim's talking about the same thing at GPO. What did you find were the most effective ways of communicating with employees to get them to understand the situation as it was and as it was about to be? You can't sit down, obviously, with every single person one-on-one.
I think the short answer to that question is as many different venues and opportunities and with a great deal of frequency, right? You want to be communicating nonstop. And this goes back to, I think, John's point about, the surveys about kind of what's not worked within the context of reorganizations. I think oftentimes there's not enough focus on the communications aspect of it, the change management, really explaining to employees kind of what's going on at any given time. So within the context of the MMS reorganization, I mean, I think we actually had one of the work teams just focused on communications, and the work team was comprised of employees themselves, right? But their jobs throughout the transformation period was to focus on making sure that they were, and we were all collectively being as transparent as possible about everything that was happening. And so we utilized the internet kind of listservs for daily, you know, emails. We utilized literally poster boards up that we shared information in different offices about. We utilized frequent, I would say at least monthly leadership meetings where all employees would gather together for, an update. So there's lots of different venues that I think you can take advantage of, but it's hard to imagine a scenario in which you were doing too much communications. I think it's really all about making sure that people both understand what's going on, but also, again, trying to create opportunities for them to get involved.
Max, she actually alluded to something that I was going to go to you next, and that is it possible to do too much communication where you have your employees going, oh, stop with the reorg stuff already?
Haven't seen it yet. I think that, again, there's consistency with both John and Rhea that it is the place where most agencies fall down, and it's not just in the reorganization context in the general business. Most organizations in the private sector have a fairly big investment in internal communication. There are very few federal agencies that I'm aware of that really invest consequentially in communicating with their own employees, and that's a massive problem. Obviously, when change is going on, you need to double down. And I think also, and Rhea made mention of this, which is it's not simply communicating, telling them what's happening, but it's also really, if you want them to lead, you have to be soliciting their input to understand what kind of change is actually going to work and what kind of change is necessary, so that it's not sharing information, it's not one-way communication, it's really two-way. And I think there are kinds of ways to achieve that in today's world that are very attractive, and that by and large the government's been slow to the party on.
John, it strikes me that is something that is improving in government, the two-way communication and the participation, as Rhea talked about, at the employee level of what the employees have to offer to potentially make changes in the reorganization plan and so on. Are agencies getting better fast enough at that, do you think?
I think our data would say the agencies aren't getting better fast enough, but what Rhea shows is the ability to get better pretty fast because of the availability of channels. What Rhea described was a multi-channel communication process, which is using the internet, using the parts of the internet that the employees are using, and town halls. These are all multi-channel ways to reach employees. I would just emphasize on a couple of points that have been made. The most effective, once you've got the multi-channel push of information out, is to back it up with employees themselves. Beyond the town halls, it's usually manager to manager or manager to their groups to be the essentially to embody and to lead by example. That gives people a lot of confidence. So at some point you have to pivot to the employees essentially embodying everything about the communications and delivering themselves personally. And the other thing I would say is it's really important to think of the employees like you would in Maslow's hierarchy of needs. The first thing they worry about is themselves. Essentially what's happening to me, my job, my benefits, and then start to worry about my organization. Is this a place where I can have a career? Is this a place where I can grow? Then they start to worry. Once they get through those two stages, they worry about the future. So where are we going to be? How are we going to, is this a place where I can essentially grow beyond my current engagement? Is this a place where I can get greater value as a career, as a connection, as a community? And you need the communication to flow through that way. You've got to reassure them first. Then you've got to make sure they understand how it fits within their career. Then you've got to show them the organization and where it's going. If you do all those things in a very structured way using all the channels, you can do it very effective. And I think Rhea's shown you can do it fast. You just have to be that thoughtful.
Each of you has used in one form or another, directly or indirectly, the word opportunity. And when we continue the conversation, I want to talk more about opportunity and what that means. A lot of people have looked at reorganization in the federal government as a burden, and we'll talk about how it can be an opportunity when we come back.
What if innovation could help you solve your most perplexing challenges, get more for your budget, reveal hidden opportunities? What if you could do things differently? Turn to Deloitte. We help federal agencies blend their data with emerging technologies to deliver innovative solutions faster, from design thinking to digital prototypes to results. See how at Deloitte.com/federal. We help government help America.
Welcome back to our conversation about restructuring and reorganizing in the federal government. My guests on the panel today are Max Steyer, the Partnership for Public Service, Rhea Sue of the Interior Department, John Powers of Deloitte Consulting, and Jim Bradley of the Government Printing Office. We're talking about this issue in the context of a number of issues that agencies are dealing with, budget constraints and the idea of doing more with less. One of the themes throughout our conversation so far has been the theme of opportunity. Restructuring and reorganization does not have to be a burden. It can be an opportunity for agencies to realize any number of benefits. Rhea, I'm going to start with you because you explicitly used that word opportunity a number of times. Why do you make it a point to use that word when you're talking about the issues that you've gone through with restructuring and being able to portray what you've done as a success?
Well, I think in many ways we all want to be empowered when we think about change. And given that there is the overarching, I think, push to re-examine the way in which the federal government works, I think we could stand back and say, okay, something's going to be done to us in terms of budget cuts, in terms of directives for consolidation, whatnot. Or we could say, you know, within this context, where do we think we have the biggest opportunity to continue to focus on our mission or even improve our mission, but at the same time be more efficient about it, right? That I think is the empowering question for leaders like me, as well as the empowering question for the people that actually work in the bureaus that really I think have the best ideas for how to again improve mission delivery services while potentially improving efficiency and effectiveness.
Jim, government leaders tell me that when they hear the words reorganization, restructuring, their employees automatically think this is not going to be good. This is going to be a negative. How do you go about presenting what you have in a way that, first of all, is honest and sincere to the employees? Second of all, portrays to them that this is a situation that potentially will be to their benefit?
Of course, change is always unnerving for people, be it in the workplace or other venues. I think the biggest thing is honesty and as much information as possible up front and during the process. We think we did a pretty good job with that during our buyout and our reorganization, but it continues. And we say we're just getting ready to have some town hall meetings in the next few weeks to discuss how we're doing with the employees and see their concerns. We also put together in the last year a feedback mechanism where employees can anonymously express concerns to the head of the agency for us to act on. We'll investigate it. Maybe it's a management issue. It may be something we need to involve our unions with to bring some change about. But that's been very helpful to air out things that are bothering individual employees as part of the buyout or just in general working conditions, because we do want to be a model employer and we want to keep employees happy and productive.
Agencies have been reluctant to open that direct feedback loop for a long time. Are you seeing, one of the concerns was, we're going to get a whole lot of either extraneous information or just people grousing for the sake of grousing. What kind of feedback are you getting? Are you getting the substantive feedback you expected?
We get all of that. I mean, and to be very honest, you do get that and that kind of thing. However, there's been some real nuggets of helpful concerns brought forward, which the management team, in combination and partnership with the unions, have been able to solve and move on with. In some cases, it may be something that they just haven't talked to their supervisor. Now, it's anonymous, so we don't really go back and try to figure out who said what, but we can go at it in a way that the word gets out and that the situations change. Sometimes it's just a little annoyance, or there's too much trash or something. It's like, okay, well, we can deal with that. We can fix that real quick. And then we post the results to everybody so that they know they don't necessarily know who made the complaint, but they know that we've taken action. And it's been helpful.
One of the things that is at the core of what Jim is talking about, Max, is just the fact that we're demonstrating that somebody's paying attention to what you're talking about. That's something that managers tell me their rank and file employees are most worried about, is we send something up the chain and we never know whether anything happens or whether anybody even read it or heard it or talked about it.
Absolutely. Look, I think there are lots of opportunities, again, and technology is a big enabler here to get information from people to reduce those, 8, 10, 12, 14 different steps up through the hierarchy to one. The employee viewpoint survey is a great example of that, which is done now annually. We're working with Deloitte on our best places to work rankings that's based on that employee viewpoint survey. It's a really, really powerful way of actually providing a voice to the employees in a way that really matters and that drives both attention to issues that they care about, but also a mechanism to hold accountable leadership. And I think one of the features that is very distinctive about the federal environment is that you see leadership turnover at a regular and rapid clip. And that's part of our political process. One of the consequences is for the career employee, they see that leadership turnover happen all the time. So you talk about restructuring, you talk about change. John talked about how many employees have experienced this. It's a change-scarred workforce. They are used to people coming in saying, I got the plan, we're going to do it. And the fact of the matter is that you never actually get that thing completed before the new team comes in and decides that they have their own plan for what's about to happen. So I think you have to understand the psychology here. I think the opportunity now to get real-time information, to be responsive to it, is really important to be able to generate the kinds of returns we want out of government. And this is a big, to your word, opportunity, and a really important one to address what is a structural challenge to manage effectively with that leadership group turning over.
John, you've talked a couple of times in this conversation today about the ability of agencies to receive a volume of information that wasn't possible even 2 years, 5 years ago. Specifically, what can agencies learn? What can they understand? How fast can they do it? And what do they do with the data that they're able to collect now that they weren't able to collect in the past?
Yeah, there are three things that are new, and it's new in the commercial environment as well, meaning that the tools are sophisticated now that they can. It's not so much the receive as it is process. So before you would receive a volume, it's just very difficult to get through it, but now we can process it much faster. So first goes to what Jim was talking about, on allowing employees a safe and confidential way to get their point heard. And in addition to the point, we do quite a lot now is search the metadata on how do those points change over time, what are the terms people are using. You can actually see behavioral or attitudinal change through comments or issues that are brought up in this anonymous way. So it's very helpful for getting a sense of the pulse without it being a direct line of information, in addition to the information you get. The other way we've seen people use it is the sourcing of, I'm going to say, ideas. And this is one that's often overlooked, but with crowdsourcing technology, I'm a consultant, but to be blunt, the smartest ideas are usually in the organization. So yes, we often get paid to come in and farm those ideas, but we're working with the employees. So the government of Canada, we did the same kind of idea. We asked the people in the agencies in Canada, what are the best opportunities to make your agency more efficient, to see how much consistency we saw across the agencies around what those ideas were, because that would get you on a path of doing the same thing and getting maximum leverage out of it. So that's a really important point as well. And the last is, and this is a relatively new phenomenon, is testing belief. So in a lot of times, surveys test engagement, how much do people like or feel. But the surveys are now sophisticated enough, you can actually test how much they believe in what you've told them about your vision or about a specific part of the vision. You can really be very surgical in understanding how much people understand and are behind an idea. And the key to that is speed of change. So you could quickly essentially adjust your plan if you think either you've not communicated it well enough, or you need to change the mind of the employee, or you need to change your plan to fit what would be a better approach for the employee. So I think the data is enabling you to more rapidly adjust and improve the way you execute your transformation.
When you worked on the MMS transformation, Rhea, did you get to that level of detail and sensitivity about the people that you were dealing with?
Absolutely. I don't think you can do any of these types of reorganizations without getting to that level of detail, without connecting to the individual employees as much time as that adds potentially to whatever transformation period or reorganization period you may have. And I think, again, to underscore an earlier point, I think it's so much harder to think about implementation of a reorganization than it is to think about what the reorganization should be about and how much money it'll save or what it will actually result in, right? So the plan's the easy part, the implementation's the harder part, but the implementation is also where the opportunity is, I think, fundamentally to do what Max was alluding to in terms of to get over that challenge of how do you get past the cynicism of change in the federal government. How do you get past the reality of the fact that there are a lot of leadership changes that happen with political waves, and how can you really embed an idea, whether it's an idea around better improvement of mission delivery services or improvement in terms of a restructuring for efficiency purposes? How can you actually make that stick? How can you actually make that meaningful in a way? And that's really all all about employees and all about the implementation aspects. And I think all of the ideas that, that both Jim and John talked about of really, you know, not only in terms of the creativity of how do you actually get those ideas from employees and how do you feed those ideas back to employees, but the opportunities that I think we have to really, have a much more employee-driven sense of opportunity here, I think really is where I sit. I think the biggest opportunities that we see.
Max, I want to tie what we've talked about here into some work that your organization does year in, year out. You mentioned the Best Places to Work survey.
Right.
One of the things that we see year after year after year in that is that the people who think that they work at one of the best places to work
Right. Do
it because they buy into the mission of the agency that they work at.
Yes.
And so that's either explicit or implicit in just about everything that we've talked about today. When agencies look at reorg, how are they doing, do you think, at thinking about that and going backwards rather than starting at reorg and moving forward to eventually we'll talk about how this is going to help us execute the mission better?
Not very well generally. I think there are exceptions, obviously, and you've chosen the exceptions here, which is, I'd rather learn from the good than from the bad. You can learn from both. But by and large, I think the dialogue begins with the desire to find a solution that is understandable, that's concrete, that there's a sense that you can do, and that generally involves a restructuring, as opposed to starting from an objective around mission and then figuring out what are the set of activities that might generate in real time, given the constraints of execution, which are very, very real, how to achieve that success.
And if I may, the solution potentially, it strikes me, should be in each of these cases, how can we better deliver the mission of the agency to the person who's supposed to be receiving that mission. Is that fair to say?
Absolutely. And I do think one of the other core challenges in the public sector space is that actually communicating, measuring performance is a lot more challenging than it is in the private sector, where you have a single currency that defines success. When you're dealing with public goods, it's really hard to understand what success is, to communicate that well. I think government needs to get better at that if they're going to succeed in achieving the larger goals we're talking about here.
We're almost out of time. John, Max used the term defining success, and that's where I want to conclude our conversation. When an agency steps back and says, okay, we've executed the steps that we laid out to get where we wanted to be, how did we do? What should they be looking at, and how should they be looking at the information that they have to work with?
I think the key is, how has that mission been improved in the way that it's delivered or in what it delivers? So in either way, in either the efficiency or effectiveness of how they deliver against the mission, or that the mission is now delivering a higher value to the U.S. I mean, that's what you have to ask yourself. If at the end of the day, we can say that, and however we want to measure it, if you can say that, that's success. Ideally, you'd have on the right after that, and the employees are better off for it, that are with this organization, would be the and. And I think it can be an and.
Thanks to all of you for participating in this conversation. It's been a great conversation about restructuring and reorganizing in the federal government. Jim Bradley of the Government Printing Office, John Powers of Deloitte, Rhea Sue of the Interior Department, Max Steyer of the Partnership for Public Service. Thank you very much for joining us today.
These days, federal agencies are exploring how to be more efficient, from cutting hidden costs to operating differently. Turn to Deloitte. We blend public sector experience and private sector insights to help defense and civilian agencies rethink, reduce, and restructure, all while strengthening your mission so you can stretch budgets more and your staff less. See how at Deloitte.com/federal. We help government help America.
Thank you for listening to Reorganization and Restructuring in Government, presented by Deloitte on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. If you missed any portion of the show, you can watch a video feed of the show in its entirety and on demand at federalnewsradio.com.